Hi, it's Dr. Julie, and I'm a doctor of psychology and a licensed clinical social worker specializing in cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm here to help you bring the power of CBT into your own life. So welcome. I appreciate you being here. I wanted to read a message that somebody sent to me on my Facebook page, where you can find me under Dr. Julie Osborne. And he said, I've just discovered your podcast and listened to a few episodes. This is a wonderful podcast from what I've listened to. I've scrolled through the topics and so many jump out at me that I just don't know where to catch up. I'm starting at the beginning and I'm so excited. I love the way you explain things. You can tell you have great knowledge and I'm very privileged to have found this. I am based in Melbourne, Australia. So thank you to my listener and reaching out. And I love hearing from people all over the world. Never thought I'd be reaching people in Melbourne when I first started, but it's really fun hearing from you guys. So again, send me messages, ideas, questions. I love hearing from you. And before the podcast is over, I'll go over all the places you can find me. And again, I'm really appreciative. So today I wanted to talk about something that is in the Mind Over Mood book by Dr. Kreenberger and Dr. Podesky, the one I talk about all the time, Mind Over Mood. And if you're wanting to get that book and you go onto my website, and if you hit the tab that says Store, if you scroll past merchandise that's on there, you will see two books, Mind Over Mood and Feeling Great by Dr. David Burns. If you click it on, it will just directly take you to Amazon. So it's just the easiest way to find it. You know, you're buying the right book. So I just kind of wanted to share with you that that's the easiest way, because I know a lot of people want to make sure they're buying the right one and it's the second edition. But that's where I would suggest you going. And if you want to get the book and get started. So the chapter I'm going to talk about today is in chapter 11, for those of you that have the book already. And in chapter 11, we're talking about underlying assumptions and behavioral experiments. So I talk to people all the time that, you know, the B in CBT is behavioral. So it's cognitive behavioral therapy. So yes, I know I talk a lot about the cognition part, right? Your thoughts, identifying your hot thoughts, challenging them, coming up with more balanced alternative thinking. But the behavior part's really important as well. One thing to know if you're really struggling with, say, depression, anxiety, whatever moods, anger, feeling insecure, overwhelmed. If you're really struggling, you just feel like, oh my God, it's so hard and I just can't even figure out what I'm thinking and I don't have the energy to write in a book or anything like that. You know, you can always change your behavior faster than your thoughts. So an example is, you know, you may feel depressed, right? And I would say, you know, could you at least go and outside and walk down to the corner stop sign and come back home, or go take a walk around the block, go take your dog out, you know, whatever it might be. Like, that's a behavior that I don't have to think differently. I don't even have to feel differently, but I can go do something. And just moving and getting yourself out can make, you know, your first kind of steps to getting better and can really make a difference. I've had people share with me, you know, using my mantra that you want to make decisions based on what's best for you, not how you feel, that was the one thing that got them out of the house, because they just couldn't seem to get themselves to do anything else. So it really does work if you're willing to try and say, okay, what's some behavior changes I can make, even though I don't feel like it, even though I'm having a hard time changing how I'm thinking, although I'm having a hard time letting go of this feeling, you know, what's something I can do that would be good for me? And that's something I can check off my box for the day and know that I'm starting to go in the right direction. So I really want to talk more about the behavioral experiments and what would those look like for you. So I'm going to give you a bunch of different ideas and you obviously figure out what's going to work best for you. This is your therapy. This is your treatment plan. It's not about comparing it to others. It's saying, you know, what's going to work for me? What can I push myself if I have to? What can I make myself do to start feeling better? And what's an experiment even look like? I have a lot of people ask me, which is a fair question. So to take a step back from that for a second, we want to identify what your underlying assumptions are. And then we're going to follow that up with the behavioral experiments. So again, if you have the Mind Over Mood book already, I'm on chapter 11. I'm going to borrow some examples from the book today, and obviously share with you some of my own ideas and things I've worked with other clients. But Just want to give you some direction on where I'm working with the book. So underlying assumptions, let's figure out what those are first of all, right? Those are thoughts that operate below your awareness, just kind of under the surface. And these are rules, basically, that you live by. And each of us have hundreds of underlying assumptions, right? So you can help yourself identify assumptions by thinking of them as, if I do this, then that happens. So in the chapter, you will see a whole page on this exercise where the authors put if and a line and then and another line. So, you know, if I speak up in class, then people are going to stare at me. If I answer the wrong answer in class, then people will laugh at me. So that's that if then we do all the time. And that's why we have hundreds of these underlying assumptions, and they really affect our behavior. They determine what we're going to do, right? So I'm going to share the first example in, again, chapter 11, that I thought was a really good example the author shared. It was about a married couple, and the husband was very focused on being punctual wherever he went, and they had a party to go to. And the party started at 7, and he wanted to show up at 7. And they talk about in the book that he was raised to be there on time, wherever he was going. And when he wasn't, he wouldn't be showing respect to the host. So his thought was that if I'm invited to a party at 7 p.m., then I need to be on time. I'm expected to be on time and not disrespect the host. So his if-then was that if I'm late, then I'm disrespecting the host. So that's where he's coming from, okay? But he's got a wife who didn't grow up with those same rules and looks at it differently. So she looks at it that 7 p.m. is the suggested time. And if we arrive on time, it'll put pressure on the host. So she was raised like, you know, 7, yeah, that's when it starts. But whenever you show up and, you know, if we show up right on time, there's going to be pressure on the host and she's got to have everything together. So it's a really interesting example, right? If here's one person's like, oh, if we show up, it's disrespectful. And she's thinking if we show up, it's too much pressure. So they're always arguing every time they're going out somewhere. And he's ready and he's bugging her and texting her, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? And she's like, why are you getting upset? And you're taking all the fun out of this. I'm just getting ready. But she didn't start as early as seem. So you can see that when you have these underlying assumptions of how others should be or how you want to be, and they may be getting in the way, it can really cause some relationship problems. This makes me think about when I talk to people about doing like premarital therapy, you know, what are your underlying assumptions about finances, raising the kids? Maybe, you know, what kind of religion are you going to follow or what's that going to even look like? You know, who's going to pay the bills? What kind of things we're going to do on our vacation? There's a lot of underlying assumptions like, oh, I enjoy this, so my partner's going to enjoy this, or I'm a saver, so she's probably a saver, or, you know, whatever that looks like. And this issue about being on time and place comes up all the time for people in general, not just relationships, but, you know, friends also. So these are things, you know, we really want to be clear on, you know, what are our underlying assumptions? Are they causing us problems? What are my friends? What are my coworkers? What are my partners also underlying assumptions? And we need to be clear about them. And if they're not working for us, what can we do to change them and test them? So we're going to get into that too as I go along. But so if you're like, okay, so what do I do if I have this underlying assumption? We're going to figure that out as well. So going back to this couple, so since he's, you know, ready early and she's not, they're fighting all the time. And it just takes the joy out of the evening, probably. They get to the party. They're probably irritated with each other. He's probably pissed off they're late. She's pissed off maybe they're too early or that he was just kind of ragging on her or nagging her the whole time. So, you know, these things can definitely be worked out, but we need to be able to know what our underlying assumptions are. Because just like our hot thoughts, most of us really don't know what our assumptions are or we're not paying attention to them. But we're living off of them. They're the rules we follow, like I said, right? But it's really affecting our lives and our daily activities. So when you can identify your underlying assumption, it also allows you to have a deeper understanding of the roots of your behaviors and your automatic thoughts. So remember, all your thoughts are automatic. Once we write them down, then we figure out which ones are facts, which ones are hot thoughts. Hot thoughts, thoughts that aren't 100% true. So just to repeat that, when we can identify our underlying assumptions, it will allow you to have a deeper understanding of the roots of your behaviors. Why do you choose to do things the way you do? And what your automatic thoughts are. And then when you get to know what your underlying assumptions are, it gives you the opportunity. You guys know I love that word, opportunity. Everything can be an opportunity in your life to assess whether your underlying assumptions are beneficial or not. And creating new underlying assumptions that may work better for you. So many of your underlying assumptions can explain the same behavior in you that's the same of others, even though you can't really see it, right? You think it's, you know, negative, meaning like this couple I mentioned, they both had good intentions, but it was just based on their own assumptions. And that's why you want to remember, too, you cannot assume you know someone else's underlying assumptions just by looking at their behavior. Right, because if the husband was judging the wife, he's thinking she's disrespectful, she doesn't care. But they both had good intention in respecting the host. She didn't want to put pressure on the host, and he didn't want to think he was disrespecting the host, right? So it's really interesting, right? It was coming from the same place, it's coming from a good place, but they were irritated with each other because they really didn't understand why they both were behaving the way they were. And the underlying assumptions you figured out can also be the most important level of your thoughts to identify and test. The most important, because our automatic thoughts are always happening, and those come up in specific situations, right? We're in a situation, and it's like, okay, I'm feeling anxious. What am I thinking? Whatever my mood is, what are my thoughts? But understanding your underlying assumptions, why I say they can be the most important level of your thoughts to identify and to test, is because they're going on all the time. Because they're underlying, we're really not paying attention to them, and we're just reacting, thinking that's the way that we should be, or others should be as well. So let me give you a couple other examples too, that I'm taking these ones from the book as well because they're so good, is that when we are anxious, many of our hottest thoughts are the if-then assumptions. So some examples are, you know, if I talk, then I'll make a fool of myself. I used this one a little earlier, right? But this relates, I know, to many situations. If my heart beats fast, then it means I'm having a heart attack. Or if something bad happens, then I can't cope. Those are all if-thens that are related to when you're feeling anxious. In your relationships, many misunderstandings come about because each person holds different underlying assumptions, as I've been talking about, right? So one partner might assume, you know, if you care, then you'll know what I want without me asking. Whew, that's one I hear a lot. The other partner may assume, if you want something, then you'll let me know. Well, nobody's needs are going to get met because I'm waiting for you to give me something because I think you should know. And I'm waiting to give you what you want because I'm thinking you're going to let me know. How many times does that happen, right? You should know I want flowers. You should know that's my favorite restaurant. You should know this. You should know that. You know, all the shoulds, right? So we're scolding each other. And I tell people, you know, you can never assume that your partner is going to know everything you're thinking, no matter how long you're together, because we're always growing and developing and finding new interests. And that's what having good communications about is sharing new things and say, you know what? I used to really love when you did that, but now I'd really like you to do this instead. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. You know, now that's important to me. It really wasn't before. Okay, I can do that for you. So that's where the communication comes. But these underlying assumptions, and no one's communicating, no one's needs are being met. And also behaviors that we do to extremes, such as alcohol or drug misuse, overeating, and perfectionism are often driven by our underlying assumptions. So if alcohol is an issue for you, you may say to yourself, if I drink, then I'll be more social. So that gives you permission to do that, right? If I've had a hard day, then I deserve to eat a large dessert. That also gives you permission. Or if something isn't perfect, then it is worthless. That's a tough one. I don't know where you go from there because none of us are perfect. And talking about perfectionism, I want to add a little bit. You know, the perfectionism with your own behavior is that you're afraid to make a mistake. And another cognitive aspect to think about is what we call perceived perfectionism. So this is when you think others also expect you to be perfect and that they won't respect or love you if they see you not being perfect or flawed, right? So first, I want to be perfect, but my underlying assumption is this perceived perfectionism, that others also expect me to be perfect. I won't be respected, I won't be loved if they see that I'm not perfect or flawed. So I repeated that because it's something I really want you guys to take in. You may have this going on and you don't even know it, right? How do people see me? And based on how they see me is how they're going to treat me. So again, the if-then. If I'm perfect, then they'll love me. If I'm perfect, then they'll respect me. Now, I don't want to get off topic here, but I talk about perfectionism is really interesting is that most people aren't really attracted to perfectionists because they're intimidated, thinking they're always perfect, and we don't think we are, so we're like, you know, that when people are more authentic and genuine and show their flaws, people are more attracted to each other because being authentic is something that's attractive. So your underlying assumptions could really be pushing people away. It's coming from a good place. You want to do well. You want to give others. You know, if I give others, if I buy them gifts, if I do everything they ask, then they'll always be my friends. I mean, I could go on for hours with you guys giving you the if-then sentences. You know, that's why you can see why it's so important to understand your underlying assumptions. So now that you understand what an underlying assumption is, the best way for you to test them, because they occur in many different situations, so there's definitely lots of opportunities, is to challenge them through behavioral experiments. So a behavioral experiment is a test with, again, the if-then rule, and asking yourself, is it accurate? From what, you know, is my thinking accurate, is what we're looking for. So one question to ask yourself is, did what I think was going to happen actually happen when you do the experiment? You want to try multiple experiments. You want to do lots of little ones because you need to have enough of them to see that your if-then is incorrect, or if you're doing a new one and trying something different, if that is correct and if it's accurate. Another experiment you can do too is just asking others if they hold the same assumptions. I know you might be like, what? I never thought of that. I don't want to ask somebody because then they're going to know I'm thinking that way. But let me tell you, we all have a lot of the same thoughts, believe it or not. And the ones that we're trying to hide are probably more alike than not. So saying to somebody, you know, do you sometimes maybe not speak up in a meeting because you're afraid you're going to look silly? Or do you not maybe go to a party where you know there's going to be dancing because you don't think you're a good dancer, people are going to laugh at you? You know, what kind of things do you not do or avoid, or do you overcompensate thinking if I do that, others will love me more? You know, so asking people this, it's a great question. I think you have a great conversation. People are like, oh my God, yeah, I do that. Or I used to do it. And then I realized it wasn't working for me. So I changed. So it's a great way to just start talking and saying, you know, I've been thinking about this, or, you know, sharing that you listen to the podcast, and you know, Dr. Julie suggests I just ask somebody like, do you ever do this? Because this is my underlying assumption that I do all the time. And I'm trying to see if I'm more alike than others than I realize, right? And how others see it as well. So let me give you an example going back to perfectionism. If you're a perfectionist, right, that when you aren't perfect and you still get a good reaction from people in your life, that's how you can prove that your assumptions are wrong. And with perfectionism, realizing you aren't as unique or special in this way, because sometimes that's what you tell, you know, if I do this, that makes me special, right? Like, you know, your uniqueness can kill you and keep you isolated and alone. We want to be together. We want to be connected to each other. And that for you to realize you're really like everyone else, and that can be really liberating. So doing an experiment where, say you're in a classroom or a meeting and you purposely give the wrong answer, which I know sounds horrifying, but it's an experiment, and see what people do. People snicker or laugh or make fun of you? Probably not. Most of them, if you're in a class, probably aren't even trying to answer because they don't want to be embarrassed. Or they might have thought, oh my God, that's the same thing I thought. That was my answer. I'm glad I didn't say nothing, right? So, but you want to have that experiment with like, okay, if I give the wrong answer on purpose, no one's going to even notice or react to me. That would be an experiment, right? If I don't offer to do every single thing my friend wants me to do, but I do a couple things, will they still be my friend? Will they still want to hang out with me? There's lots of different scenarios. I don't think there's really a bad experiment out there that you could come up with, long if it's not self-harming, to say, okay, let me do the opposite of what I've been doing. Let me do what I'm really fearful of, right? And see what happens, right? Let me understand my underlying assumption. So if that couple I talked about earlier said, you know, I was raised that it's like, it's really disrespectful if I'm late. You know, I need to work with you on this. Like, you know, maybe we can come up with like no more than like 10 or 15 minutes late. And the wife might be like, okay, I can go with that, right? Because I don't want to be exactly on time, but 15 minutes late, I'm comfortable with. So if we talk about and we can come up with a plan, you know, and you guys could really, if this is your situation with somebody, that could be an experiment the couple could do together. So let's show up at 7:15 and let's see what happened. Does anybody care? Is anybody upset? Or is everybody just happy when we show up? And for both parties, that could be an experiment to see nothing bad happened. Nobody was insulted. Nobody felt pressure. It's all good. And now we can have a better relationship and understand where we're both coming from and what our underlying assumptions are doing to us emotionally to get so frustrated with each other and really hurt the relationship, which is not what we want to do. We want to go to this party and have a good time together. So whether you use the Mind Over Mood book or you want to just take out a piece of paper, I want to give you some guidelines for planning the behavioral experiments. So there's a whole chart in the book that you can use, but you don't need to do that. You can just write this down. So the first thing is we want to, of course, write down the assumption that we're testing. So let's just, again, to make things easy, using the couple, the assumption we're going to test is that we're going to be 15 minutes late and everything's going to be okay. So you want to first write down how to do that and figure out what is the assumption I really want to see is true or not. I want to test. Okay. The second step is you're going to make specific predictions. So make sure that the experiments you plan are going to lead to new information so then you can evaluate your underlying assumption. And so by making specific predictions, that's one way you can do that. So then either your old or your new assumption will tell you what happened. So again, the prediction for the party is everyone's going to be happy we showed up and it's all going to be okay. Nobody's going to mention whether we were early or late or on time or late, right? So when you write down the specific predictions, you can really look back and say, oh yeah, my underlying assumption is false. That's not something I want to continue to do. Or my specific prediction that things went well, I'm going to continue to do this. This just works better for me. You also want to break the experiments up into small steps. That's number three. Because when they're small steps, they're definitely easier to do. And everything that you learn in each step you take, you can keep taking bigger steps and building on them. There's in chapter 14, which is Understanding Anxiety, there is what the authors call a fear ladder. So this is basically, if you have a piece of paper and say on the top you want to, you know, put down what your goal is, and you go to the bottom of the paper and you just start writing baby steps. This is my first thing, my next thing, my next thing, my next thing, until I reach my goal. So I think about that when it says breaking experiments into small steps, right? What's the first step I'm going to do? Maybe it's just figuring out what my underlying assumption is, right? And then figuring out how can I test this? What's the environment I want to test this in? What are the specific predictions I want to make? So breaking up into small steps, and every time you have success, you're going to be more courageous to go do a bigger step and a bigger step until you reach your goal. So as I mentioned a minute ago, you want to do a number of experiments, right? So you really need to do numerous experiments for you to really believe it, because otherwise you'd be like, well, that was at one time, right? So if it's speaking up in a meeting, in a classroom, in a social situation, like that might be different experiments. I'm going to say something in my classroom. I'm going to say something in a meeting I'm going to. I'm going to say something, you know, when I'm in a group. So when I say something, meaning, you know, if you're answering a question or you want to join in the conversation, right? Those are some experiments you can do, see what kind of feedback I get, that people are interested in you or people don't judge you. So those are all different environments, but you can be doing the same experiment. And more you do, the more confident you get. And you can do the same thing or the same experiment in the same place. So if it is in a classroom and you start just participating more and taking opportunities to answer a question or to ask the teacher a question, and you know, you don't get stared at or made fun of or laughed at like maybe you're afraid that will happen, over time you'll just be comfortable doing it. So that's important, to do a number of experiments. Usually, you know, one and done is not enough. Also, you want to do problem solving and don't quit. So when the experiments don't turn out the way you hoped, maybe it's time to problem solve, but not to quit. It's a good idea to anticipate problems that might occur before you begin doing the experiment. So that's, again, one of the charts they have in the book, which is really cool, is asking you, you know, what are some possible problems that might happen? So you're thinking ahead of time, and what would you do if that problem occurred? So there are many different ways you can plan this out to make yourself feel comfortable so you can actually take the steps. So just because things don't go well, right? I mean, that's life. Things don't always go well. They don't always go the way we predict them to be. They don't always go the way we want them to go. So we need to plan for that. And we need to say, okay, how do I need to do this differently? So I can see that possibly my new assumption or the way I really do want to be, I can make that work for myself. And then the last step is to write down your experiments and their outcomes. So we already wrote down our experiment, but then we want to go back to that list and write down what is the outcome. So it's super helpful to write down your experiments and your outcomes, right? Because writing them down makes it more likely that you're going to learn from them, because you can go back and, you know, not just say, oh, I was lucky that went well, but it's like, no, I did this step, and this was my outcome. And I keep getting the same positive outcome, you know, over and over and over again. And you can learn from your good experiences. You can learn from your bad experiences, right? Everything's an opportunity to grow and learn and tweak things. You know, I thought this was going to go well. It didn't. What could I do different? What are some of my CBT tools that I could maybe, you know, bring into my experiments to make them more successful? And again, going back to your underlying assumptions, you know, can just be so powerful. Because be like, oh, that's why I do that, right? That's why I am not making changes. That's why I don't feel like I'm getting to be successful in, you know, my goals that I have. That's why I keep drinking or having that dessert at night when I'm trying to cut back, because I tell myself, if I do this, I will feel better, right? If I have a glass of wine, I will feel relaxed, versus, you know, if I don't have a glass of wine, I can do something different. If I watch a TV show, if I take a hot bath, then I will feel relaxed. There's lots of other things you can choose. It's not just one thing, right? But we want to first understand, what are my underlying assumptions? There's a few more different exercises you might find really helpful if you're going through Chapter 11 in the Mind Over Mood book, to help identify the underlying assumptions. I'm going to go over them a little bit with you guys, but you can look it up yourself. So, if you write down an experience that you want to change, right? So if you identify behaviors that you keep doing, even if it would be better for you not to do them, staying up late watching TV, as I mentioned already, drinking too much, I mentioned overeating, criticizing someone, dating the wrong kind of people, if you're cleaning the house all the time, you want to write down the behavior with, you know, if I clean the house all the time, then it makes me exhausted. And then it'll say, if I don't clean the house all the time, then I will have more energy for things I like. So that's one exercise they have in there. They have one about, you know, avoiding situations or not avoiding them. There's also an area where you can write down if you have really strong emotions, very specific. Some examples they give is someone criticizing you, if you make a mistake, if you get interrupted, someone tries to take advantage of you, what underlying assumptions might explain your reaction right? They talk about, too, if a telemarketer calls you, right? If a telemarketer calls me, they don't care about my time, right? There's my assumption. Versus, you know, this person's trying to make a living, doing a job, you know, not out to get us, but that's our assumption. And so I think most of us are like, oh my God, it's a telemarketer, and we get annoyed, right? So if they call me, then it means they don't care about my time, right? And then you can challenge that and say, you know, why did I react so harshly instead of just saying no, thank you, and hang up and move on. Some people get so pissed off and they hold on to that anger, and it's not good for them. So there's lots of different ways to look at and identify, you know, what are your underlying assumptions. And just a lot of, you know, you guys know I love that this is my book I use. So just a lot of good stuff to think about, to go over, and to really start understanding yourself better, right? And that's what we want to do. It's one of our goals, is to understand ourselves better, understand what we're thinking, which thoughts create our moods, why we're reacting the way we are, what isn't working, what do we want to change, what do we want to stick with. And then I just want to review, I know I mentioned this a little early in the podcast, but at the end of all of this, after you do your experiments and you're looking at the outcome, again, you want to ask yourself, you know, what actually happened compared to what my predictions were? So that's why it's fun to kind of write them down early before. Does the outcome match what I predicted would happen? Did anything unexpected happen? And if things didn't turn out as you wanted, how well did you handle it? That's a great question, right? We're not looking for things to be perfect, just better. And when it didn't work out, how did I handle it? Did I handle it based on one of my underlying assumptions that I don't like? Or did I try something different? And I'm like, you know what? That felt pretty good. I want to do that next time. So again, there's lots of different options here. I know I went over a handful. You might be even more creative and come up with other experiments. Sometimes maybe, you know, you might even get some ideas from people that are close in your life, because a lot of times we can see other people's kind of underlying assumptions when they tell it to us. You know, if I don't listen to you or do everything you ask me to, you're not going to be my friend. Huh, that's an underlying assumption they have. Maybe I have the same one. So you can't guess without knowing, but sometimes just having conversations with people will share that. I'm scared if I say this or that you're going to get upset. I'm scared if I'm honest that you're going to overreact. If someone's thinking that about me, what are my underlying assumptions? That if somebody tells me the truth about something they don't like about me, that really means they don't care, that they're selfish, they're not thinking about me. Those are all underlying assumptions that most likely are not true, especially if this is someone that's important to you in your life. So, you know, just slow down, you know, take out a piece of paper, start writing down situations you're struggling with, asking yourself, you know, what are my thoughts that if this, then that, and be like, oh, that might not be true. And what do they say about assumptions, or what does assume stand for? Is making an ass out of you and me, right? Meaning that usually my assumptions are not true. A lot of times I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't assume that. I wish I asked more questions. I wish I would have taken time to figure out what I was even thinking before I reacted. Most of our assumptions are not true. Sometimes they are. Most of them are not. But let's at least look at them and figure out which ones aren't true and that we could be doing better and being happier with our lives and having better relationships and becoming more of the person we really want to be, which is one of the goals here by all of us working together and learning the CBT tools and growing and being more aware and being more mindful and feeling better about who we are for ourselves and for the relationships that we're in. So I hope this was helpful. Please share with anyone else that may benefit from this. Again, please keep reaching out. You can find me on Instagram under my CBT podcast. Facebook is Dr. Julie Osborne. My website is mycognitivebehavioraltherapy.com. Please keep sharing your thoughts, your concerns, your questions. I love hearing from you and getting your feedback. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And as I've shared with you guys before, I launched a new store on my website. So you can take a look at some fun products with my mantra and the CBT logo. They're all designed towards your therapy goals. And you can find them at mycbt.store. And as always, make decisions based on what's best for you, not how you feel.